You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 236 of the CD Baby DIY Musician podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and today's topic is the seven most important things to know about distribution in the streaming era. Now, this episode was recorded live at the CD Baby HQ. We had a special night. It's the first time we've ever recorded a podcast live at the CD Baby HQ with artists in the room with us. And so it's going to have a little bit of a different sound than normal, but it still sounds fine. In the end, you will hear some gaps, but that's when people are asking questions. You can kind of hear what they're saying, but I fill it in, so you should be okay. Before we get to that, though, I have to say that we have a huge announcement for the DIY Musician Conference. By the time you're listening to this, we may have already made it. So head on over to DIYMusicianCon.com or check out CD Baby on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, as it will definitely be posted there. But all that to say, you're going to want to be in Austin. It's coming up just a few weeks away, August 16th through 18th. It's going to be amazing. There's more sessions than we've ever had before and more performance opportunities. Some of those are no longer available, but there's still some out there. It's just going to be an amazing weekend where you can really focus on your music. And like I said, we've got a big, big announcement, and I think you'll be excited about. So head on over to DIYMusicianCon.com, get your tickets, and I hope to see you in Austin. Now, this episode of the podcast, like I said, was recorded live, and whenever we do a live episode, we play the theme song in the room and then roll into the episode. So you're going to hear the theme song again. I know you love it anyway. And here we go. The seven most important things to know about distribution in the streaming era, recorded you're live listening. At the CD Baby HQ
CD
in
Baby.
Portland.
CD
here we go.
Baby.
Musician.
All right. Live podcast.
That's genuine excitement right there.
Keep clapping. It's not over yet. We got some t-shirts here. There we go. Oh, we got another one. All right. Keep going. It's still going.
Yes.
You're getting your second wind right now. All right. We are live.
Y'all did very well. Thank you.
We are live at the first ever CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, live from the CD Baby HQ in Portland. It only took us 236 episodes to get here. So we appreciate you guys for being here. It's a pretty special moment. Is this thing working? There we go. It's actually pretty special. Chris and I have been working at CD Baby for, Chris, it's been 14 years almost. It's been 13 and a half for me. When I started at CD Baby, I actually sat next to Chris, and then I think he got irritated with me and he has to be moved. But it's really special for us because all that time, we've had really small office space, not really conducive to having this kind of event in our headquarters. Plus, you know, it wasn't the nicest place you want to bring your friends to. So we just moved to this new place here in Portland a few months back, and it's so exciting to have events here, be able to invite artists out and do a live podcast taping right from the CD Baby HQ. So thank you for being here. And also, you may have saw a couple things when you walked in our lobby. We just last night finished that mural on the wall. It's our new Instagram wall. Lots of people have wings. I don't know what the thing is with wings and people having wings where you go take your picture in front of wings. We have stage lights, so you get to step in the spotlight, get your picture taken on the Instagram wall, post it online, let everyone know you're at the CD Baby HQ. And so you can do that before you leave. And also, we have lots of these T-shirts that we made just for this event. It's got, Got the building here, the HQ. It's got an airplane. It's kind of quiet right now, but during the day, they practically go right through the building as they land on the runway.
Especially the F-15s.
The Oregon National Guard. When they land, we kind of have to just stop what we're doing. The building barely stays in one piece, and then we continue working. But yes, so it's a great spot here, and we're happy to have you in our home. So welcome. All right. What are we talking about, Chris?
Distribution.
All right. What is it? Oh, seven most important things to know about distribution in the streaming world.
Yeah, we should say that.
Streaming era.
Because distribution, I don't think is a... People don't think of it as a sexy topic. But we're going to try our best to make it sexy.
They brought out the big guns to talk about it, make it sexy.
We're both wearing denim. We have our...
That's right.
Our team uniforms.
All right. They're staring at us. Let's get started. So we have seven things, you know, with distribution, a lot has changed in the last few years as the world has finally officially adopted streaming. It is the dominant platform. That doesn't mean other platforms and formats are dead, but it is the dominant way people are engaging with music. And with it has come a lot of new ways that people are using music, listening to music, and a lot of opportunities for artists, which really feeds into the way that you distribute your music and sort of the mindset you have when you're going into the distribution process. And so that's really what we wanted to talk about today and with this episode of the podcast focus on. And I should say, at the end of the, when we're done with our seven items, we will have some time for some Q&A. So if you have questions, we'll be happy to ask. And there are quite a few CD Baby folks in the building. Raise your hand if you are a CD Baby employee, yeah. There's a couple people trying to claim it, but yeah, they're all out in the lobby. Lots of us here that can chat with you and help you with your questions. And also, one of the best things about getting artists together that I always enjoy is that some of the things and the questions and things you're wondering about can be answered by the people just from the community. Like, I'm looking for a bass player. Well, there could be a bass player sitting right next to you right now that's looking for a gig. Or an artist that's looking to go on tour with somebody else. That's some of the cool things about getting the artist community together, that people meet each other and they help each other, and it just, you know, builds the community. So take advantage of that. It was great to see so many of you just introducing yourself to each other before we started this. All right, so Chris, why don't you lead us off with number one?
All right, so number one. Distribution is about much more than pushing files from point A to point B or point A to point Z. People think now, like, oh, it's just uploading. That's all there is to this. I just upload my music and it's easy. That is the easy part. Yes, there's like 500 really other important things that come along with distribution. So we can go through some of those now. But I think the assumption that it's easy has caused a lot of people to jump quickly into the distribution game and then quickly out once they realize, whoa, this is hard work.
Maybe a little company called Spotify. You may have heard of some news recently.
I didn't want to point any fingers at anyone in particular.
Well, actually, I think from an artist perspective, one of the things I think as we've moved into the digital space and been thinking digital first, as opposed to the era where we thought, hey, when I'm going to release music, I'm going to go get a CD made, and so I have to get that done before I can even get my music out there. One of the things that we've, as artists, and you know, I'm including myself in this group, we've gotten a little sloppy. We've looked at distribution as, you know, it's easy to just, you know, post a track on Facebook with some pixelated album art, and what's different from that to getting it on Spotify? It's an album art and just a track. And there's a lot of things that happen in the background that are really important for you to understand to, one, fully monetize your music. There's a lot of information that you need to gather and have available about your music, because all these things are points of monetization and rights that we can use to get more money for your music. So that's a key thing, but there's also a lot of other things that happen in the background to make sure that what your music, how your music gets to places, is it arrives in the proper manner.
Well, when you're talking about collecting information, like if you're just signing up something with CD Baby and you're going through that sign up flow and you're getting frustrated because we're asking you 1,000 questions, yes, this is a, you know, I work here, so of course I'm going to say this, but it's absolutely
true. Our CEO's in the back, Chris. He's watching us right now.
The more questions we're asking you about your music, the better. Like, we have so many things we need to know to help you make the most money, and that's, you know, not just what is your song called. Like, that's easy. And probably if you threw it up on SoundCloud, it's spelled wrong. So don't spell it wrong. But songwriting information,
guilty.
Publishing information, is it a live version? Is it a cover? Is it, you know, you name it. We want all the information because in order for us to sort of be in the best standing we can be with digital platforms, they're asking for that information. And it just gives us a number of opportunities to position the music in catalogs or in a number of ways that are searchable databases or whatever. We want everything we can know about your music.
Yeah, we don't do it to torture you. It's not our plan. The whole point of having so much information about your music is it allows us to monetize every little right that goes along with it. It allows us to make sure it gets to the retailers available for all the opportunities that are out there, whether it's them knowing what playlists it should qualify for or who wrote it and where it was recorded. Some of that stuff's not even things we collect yet, but are coming down the line. Lyrics, all those things you should be thinking about collecting as you're recording your music, because those are the things and entry points into your music as well. So it's not just about rights, it's about how people find your music, and all these platforms do it differently. And a lot of it is when the distribution process is about making sure that your music lands in those places the way they want it, the way Spotify, the way Apple Music, the way Amazon, and all the other services that you haven't heard of that are much bigger in places like India and China, that they get your music in the right way so it stays in their store and their listeners can find it. Is that everything we need to talk about, topic number one? Oh, wait, you know what? I wasn't using this. There we go. See, I made that slide, and now we didn't get the full usage out of it. So read it in. There it is.
There's a number, like, we could get in the weeds, but, like, we also have a manual inspection process at CD Baby that a lot of distributors do not. And that means that human beings are looking at all your releases, your publishing information, all that stuff, and you know, they're going to let you know if there's problem areas, and it's not to cause you a headache. It's to save you a headache down the road that'll be way worse when Spotify says, what the hell is this? We're pulling it. And then suddenly you've got a strike against you. And if you, you know, put your music out there again, if you're lucky enough to have them repost it, get another strike. Eventually they will pull your catalog if you're kind of, what's the term? Too many strikes against you. So our manual inspection process is all about saving you those kinds of headaches.
Yeah, we are the one distribution company that is a preferred partner by two, about to announce a third, of the major digital music services. And in order to get that status, we do a lot of work to make sure your music arrives the way they want it and it's in good hands. So that was number one. So distribution is much more than just pushing files. So we do a lot behind the scenes to make sure your music is handled with care. So number two, you should release a single first. I'll let you take this one, Chris.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of... is there anyone who has not released music before?
There was a couple of people I talked to.
Or at least you haven't released music under your current artist name. So definitely put out one song first. For a few reasons. One is that right now, as soon as possible, you want to get music out there so you can make sure you get your elbows up and block out anyone else who wants to use your artist name, because we're in an age when there's billions of, not really billions, but you know, every name is being taken. And Kevin even has a story about this. He can tell you in a second probably, but like, if you think you have a cool band name, just put music out, get it out, claim your little corner of the name real estate, because someone will take it in 2 days, then you'll have to go back to the drawing board. So that's one reason. The other one that's kind of more promotional in nature is you have to plant your flag on a lot of these platforms first and claim a profile. And in order to claim a profile on Spotify or on Apple Music, you have to have music there. You can't have an artist profile on Spotify without any music there. So put music out there first, claim your Spotify for Artists account, get into Apple Music for Artists, those types of things, so you can start customizing the way you appear on those platforms with images and bios and whatever other opportunities they afford you. If you just wait and put out an album as your first release, you're wasting a ton of opportunities missing out on a ton of things you could have done had you claimed those profiles before the album dropped.
Yeah, as Chris alluded to, about a year ago, I started thinking, huh, you know, I write and record all the bumper music you hear in the podcast outside of the theme song. That's something Chris wrote. It's band. What was the name of the band?
Chris Robley and the Fear of Heights.
Wasn't that the Sordas?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was a solo one.
Okay, yeah. So Chris wrote that song, and I cut it up, made it our theme song. But all the other music you hear in the podcast is bumper music that I've written personally. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to start releasing this. And I kind of have this concept idea for this artist and kind of this 60s space theme. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, okay, I've got the idea for a name. And I went on Spotify and I searched several variations of that name, and there was nobody. And I'm like, perfect. Nobody's even using this name. That was about a year ago. I finally got around to releasing some of this music a couple weeks ago. And I go to sign it up. The name I was going to use is still available. There was two options. I'll let you guys know what they are. So you can go, because right now there's, it's been up for a week, and there's been reported of two monthly listeners. One was me.
The other one might have been me.
The other one was Chris. So we can really double, triple, quadruple that tonight. The artist name I thought of was Red Machine. One, I'm a redhead, and this is more program stuff. My main project is a band called Small Town Poets, where I'm the guitar player. But so I thought, I'm a redhead, this is more programmed and stuff like that. I thought, Red Machine, that's a cool thing. Also, the little town I live in over in Southwest Washington, Camas, the high school marching band, they call them the Red Machine. And I thought, that's the cool tie-in to my hometown where I'm at. And so this is a perfect name. And so I went to sign it up, and there was multiple artists under the name Big Red Machine, which still was not there a year ago, which I did look at that as well. Still, Red Machine was available, free and clear, but it was like, whoa, I'm glad I did this. I should have done this a year ago because I had these tracks available a year ago. And it's one of the big questions we get on the podcast constantly lately. I know that we did a recent episode about artist names, and we're constantly getting emails from artists about, is my artist name okay? Is it hard to find? It's already taken by a bunch of people. Should I still use it? So that's one reason why getting a single out there quick. You know, if you've got an artist name and persona that you want to pursue, and you're like, the album and the music's not going to be available for 6 months, still throw up a single. It could be a throwaway. Just grab that artist real estate under that name. So then when the album does come, you have access to the, on Spotify for artists, you have access to the playlist pitching tools and some of the other things that open up once you grab that account. And Apple Music is working on things. Amazon's working on a whole bunch of things for artists as well. So, a couple years from now, there's going to be lots of different accounts that you're going to need to connect. So that's why we recommend a single first.
So you mentioned some of the particularly Spotify promo tools that you can get if you have a Spotify for Artists account, which kind of leads us to our next point, which is that release dates don't really matter anymore. But release timelines are more important than ever. When you release your music, who cares? But when you know when you're going to release it, you've got to make sure you plan in advance for a number of things in order to take advantage of them. And Spotify's direct playlist consideration submission tool is one of those. In order for you to be eligible for that, you have to sign your music up for distribution. Make sure you have a future release date that's quite a bit out. We'll send it to Spotify. Once they've got it, about, I think, 24 hours or so later, you'll then see it in your Spotify for Artists account in a section that's called Unreleased Music, I think, Unreleased
yes,
Tracks, something
yes.
like that. And you click that, and then you can then submit that song for Spotify to consider for their editorial playlists, which I always say is, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. They might like it. They might not lead anywhere. But the one super powerful thing that you're guaranteed, if you take that step, you know that all your Spotify followers will absolutely hear that song in Release Radar, which is their, you know, the customized weekly Friday playlist. So you definitely want to do that, but you can't do it if you just sign it up with CD Baby and you want to make it live tomorrow, because Spotify requires that it be at least seven business days ahead of the release that you submit it to them. So
yeah, I think it's best to probably make sure they have it like 2 weeks in advance. You never want to be the person that's just squeaking in.
Yeah.
But going to the point of release dates don't matter. Part of that is in a streaming world where music is being pulled and grouped together by themes, by genre, by mood. No one's listening to a chill playlist. In fact, we had a playlist on earlier while you were all talking. No one was listening to that going, oh man, this track was from 2003. This blows. I'm leaving this party. Nobody knew. So, you know, back in the day, it used to be all like, if you weren't, you know, top of mind that day your music came out for the press, the blogs, even before blogs, like the press and the stores, if it wasn't like out that week, they weren't interested. Nobody cares about that. That still does play into getting some of that press, but some of that's becoming less and less important for you anyway. So forget about rushing it to market. That's a waste of most of your opportunity. And like Chris was saying, that I just did that this morning for another single, Under the Red Machine, which we're going to quadruple our listeners tonight.
Yes.
Having enough time in order to make sure that you have the tools to push it the places that are actually going to do things for you. So that's more important than specific release dates. Now, there's some exceptions to the rule. If you've got Christmas music or if you've got certain things that need to be timed to take advantage of holidays or times of the year, if you've got a surf album, probably not the best idea to drop it in December. But by and large, you don't need to fixate on the date, but really focus on, am I taking advantage of this release cycle? Because that's what's really going to help you.
Yeah, I just wanted to reemphasize kind of what you started saying there, because we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, but it is endlessly exciting to me that when you put out your music, doesn't matter, in the sense that like we can get over that mindset of, oh, that was my thing from 5 years ago, or that was something I released in the 70s. No, there's no energy behind that. That era is gone. We're not concerned with the end caps at a record store, making sure items move real quick. Like, if it's good music, it's going to find an audience, or it can find an audience, as long as you're putting in the effort and, you know, the targeting and stuff, and doing the things you need to do to get it in front of someone. And every single week I'll be listening, not so much to Release Radar, because that tends to be new music, but Discover Weekly on Spotify. There'll be songs I've never heard of from, you know, I don't know, the 50s through today. And I, like Kevin's saying, I don't care when it came out. If I love it, I look it up and I'm like, wow, this is from the 80s. How have I never heard this? Like, this is an amazing song. And I think that's really exciting for probably everyone in the room, that, you know, if you're proud of your music, it can always find an audience and you don't need to give up on it just because it was last month's news. Like, that's not really a thing anymore.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about the move into the streaming era and us being able to see so many artist success trajectories here at CD Baby is we've seen so many artists where they had a song that for 2, 3, 4 years had no audience. And then suddenly in a streaming world, it found an audience and it exploded and it's made their career. That would not have happened when I started in music, and it was very much a CD world. And like Chris said, that end cap game. If you're not on the end cap, if you don't have the stores buying in on that week, they're not the release week, they're not going to buy in later. That era is over. And so for you, that means that the opportunity for your music is infinite. There's not this ticking clock saying that if it doesn't happen by this date, it's not going to happen. You can still find an audience. And for me, that's incredibly exciting and encouraging, because the point becomes building a catalog that people love, and if you create music that people love, it can find a voice and can continue to find a voice in the future.
Except that the one ticking clock is kind of the one you set for yourself now by setting a release date you can plan towards, and we've talked about the direct submission tool with Spotify. Some other things you're going to want to think of in advance is whether you're going to do pre-ads on Apple Music, you know, pre-sales on Amazon. What are some other things? Like a pre-save campaign through Show.co. You want to raise your hand if you know what Show.co is?
It's our marketing platform you get for free by having a CD Baby account. You should check it out.
Yeah, so you can run a Spotify pre-save campaign for free, but that's obviously something you need to do pre-release. So just consider all those sorts of things you want to plan for.
Yeah, it's always been my experience as an artist that we get so obsessed with, it has to be out by this date, otherwise it's just not going to happen. And really, it doesn't matter. And we just need to relax and finish the creation process, take a deep breath, and then plan the release. I'm actually in that with Small Town Poets, my main musical project. We've got a whole bunch of songs we're working on. We've got one being mixed right now. We thought it'd be done a couple weeks ago, and I'm just like, just relax. It'll be out when it's out, and we'll make the best of it. So, all right, let's go on to number four.
Oh, this is my favorite topic. Because it's so depressing.
If you've listened to the podcast for a long time, I tend to be the more positive, optimistic voice on the show. Chris likes to really bring the room down, and we're about to do that right now. So,
okay, so playlists won't make you famous. You cannot put all of your hopes into, oh, I just got to get on the right official Spotify playlist and suddenly my career will be made. If you get on an official Spotify playlist, what will happen is you'll get many, many streams, and that's great. So I've been telling this story a lot over the past few months, so apologies if you heard it a bunch, but there's some friends of mine who are in a band called Date Night, and they invited me to collaborate with them and do like a thing where they created the track and I did the lyrics and melody and recorded my vocals as a collaboration, and they put it out. They have a bunch of Spotify followers, so I thought, well, you know, not only is this creatively interesting for me, but I think this could drive a lot of streams, and it did. My monthly listeners went from like 1,000 to 70,000 in a couple weeks.
I got jealous, I have to say.
Yeah. And then they have since sort of been on an average over the past few months of about like 35,000, which my ego, I feel, you know, pretty cool. It doesn't matter. It's paying me some money, but there's this thing called dry streams where it's listening that's passive. Your music is meeting a need. Someone might listen and like it. They might even add it to one of their own playlists or, you know, save it. But they're not necessarily going back to my artist profile and digging in and doing that kind of like Googling research to be like, oh, I love this. How can I be a better fan or how can I be a deeper fan? And I say this because as the song was taking off, I was noticing whenever I sold CDs or had an email, you know, new email subscriber or any of the kind of metrics I look at for an actual like really quality engagement, I knew where they all came from. It was either because they saw me doing live streaming or it was some effort I was doing on social media to boost email subscribers. It was my own sweat, to be gross about it. That was getting people to take those deeper engagement actions. It wasn't all this new Spotify streaming activity. I'm super grateful for that opportunity, and I think it's setting me up for the next time I release music to make at least a little bit of a deeper connection with some of those people, because they will hear, you know, many of them will hear whatever I put out next. But I can't lean on that. I can't lean on lots of playlist placements to necessarily... Yeah, what am I trying to say here? You can pick it up.
Make you famous.
Make me famous.
It says playlists will make you famous.
Indeed.
Yeah, to go along with what Chris was saying, I think what a lot of things have happened in the streaming world where there's just been a fundamental shift in how fans engage with music. And a lot of it has been amazing, and it's opened up opportunity for music to be used in so many different ways. However, I would almost say that there's this new segment of music where I would call it music as a service. Some people use Spotify similar to how Pandora is used. I go to my dentist office, they've got peaceful piano playing on in the background. They don't have death metal playing while they're filling a cavity. So that actually, I would go to that dentist. I would find that thrilling. but this idea that we're using music as more of a service filler and background.
It's like a utility. Like the lights, you turn the light switch on.
That we've never seen before. And that can drive a lot of streams, which can drive revenue, but it doesn't necessarily equal fans. And so those things aren't bad. Those things can be good, but you, as artists, we've kind of entered this era where everyone is like, Spotify playlist, that's my path to success. I'm going to spend whatever I can, throw whatever money I can at getting on Spotify playlists, because that's the end all be all. And that's just not true. I've experienced this multiple with multiple releases with the band that I'm in, Small Town Poets. We've been, each release that we've done recently has been picked up by one of the New Music Friday playlists for Spotify. We get a giant spike of streams on those first couple days, and then it drops like a rock. And like Chris mentioned, there's not really this groundswell of fan engagement and new fans and people really listening to the music. People heard it, which isn't a bad thing, but it didn't make our career. It didn't make us famous. So there is some usefulness of these playlists, but as an artist, it's not something that we should put all our eggs in that basket, because that's not, at the end of the day, what's the only thing needed in order to make your career. I'm sure we've all heard stories of, you know, someone getting placed in a giant playlist and it exploding their career. And sure, that can happen. Just like being on pop radio could really help you out. But for most of us, that's not the case.
Yeah, and I think, like, I don't know what we're at now, like 400 or 500,000 streams. I'm excited for the check. Like, don't get me wrong. Money-wise,
I expect a picture on social media.
Yeah, I'll take a picture. So that's all good. It's just this thing that, yeah, you can't lean on, and you definitely can't replace any of your other efforts that are actually about reaching people kind of the old-fashioned way, like email, planned shows, live streaming, anything that's about a direct connection, because that's the stuff that's going to make you a fan who will pay you every time you put out a CD, buy your T-shirts, all that kind of stuff that's way more important. So just don't let your focus on playlists replace anything that is more direct.
Yeah, they can be very helpful, and it's worth spending time trying to engage with curators, but that is not the end game right there. So that leads us into number five. The world is much bigger than Spotify. Spotify, I give them credit for really establishing how streaming is fundamentally different than the physical world and how people engage with music differently. You know, in Spotify, it's actually really hard to just go and look at new releases, but it's really easy to search by mood or by experience. I can find workout music, I can find chill coffee music, or I can find, you know, the top hip-hop or top rock. And a lot of people are engaging with music like that, music looking for collections. And so that really allows people to find music in a way that they never had before. And so I think Spotify's really set the stage for how that can be different, but they are not the only platform. And I know we are in the United States right now, and all of us here in the United States that are listening live, we have listeners to the podcast all over the world that could attest to the fact that in different territories around the world, there are different services that are much, much bigger. In fact, in certain areas, they don't have Spotify. Even here in the U.S., a lot of the music community talks about Spotify because of playlisting, but Apple Music, they go back and forth saying who's the biggest. Apple Music is huge here. Amazon, we've talked to a lot of the folks over at Amazon, and they're doing some really cool things that will be launching in the coming year or two to really get artists excited, engaged, and have a lot of long-term commitment towards building a streaming ecosystem. Some of it that's more forward-thinking than where Spotify is, with like Alexa and voice activation and people engaging with music. And what does that look like in the future when people want to access music just by talking to a device? How do you even get found that way? So just thinking about Spotify is really just thinking really small and in the now, but really understanding where your opportunity could be coming from, could be global, could be in China, could be in India, where a lot of these places where they have millions and millions and millions of subscribers engaging with digital music that didn't 5 years ago. And some of those things could mean a lot of opportunity for you if you understand what's happening on a global scale.
Yeah, Deezer is pretty huge in a lot of places around
Europe.
And you talked a lot about Amazon, and I think just maybe the most basic level of excitement you could have about that as a platform is, unlike Spotify, Amazon's not really, you know, I guess they are a music company, but Spotify is only an audio company. Amazon has pretty much endless resources to throw at becoming an amazing streaming platform that continually develops and continually opens up new opportunities for listeners and you to engage with listeners. I mean,
I watch their Amazon Prime jet land every day here. They're planning to take over the world, and they want to make sure you're using all their stuff. So, but, you know, some of the thing is, not only is it, do I say Spotify isn't the only one because it's a global economy and you should be thinking globally, but a lot of times artists, when they actually dig in the data, their fans are fractured across a lot of services. So for my band, Small Town Poets, our last album came out last year, and I used our marketing page that we have here called Here Now, which allows, you know, has all the different services listed, and fans can click on whichever one they want to go to. And what shocked me is after it was like Apple Music and Spotify were neck and neck for number one, and the third one was Amazon. And if I had put three links out, I probably wouldn't have included Amazon. I would have thought the iTunes store, or maybe some, I don't know, dark horse that I didn't expect from somewhere else. But a lot of times your fans might be engaging on platforms different than you're thinking you want them to be on. So that's why you need to dive into the data and really understand where your fan base is. And for us, even, you know, we'll talk a little bit later, some of them are still in the CD world. So that's something that you really have to think. There's a lot of buzz around Spotify or playlisting, but that may not be where your fans are. And if you're only thinking in that one platform, you could be missing out some obvious opportunity, or keep sending all your fans that are on Amazon or Apple Music a Spotify link and they get frustrated and just give up because that's not where they're at.
Indeed.
All right.
Number six. Streaming platforms reward you for releasing more music more often. It's true.
It's true.
It's true they do. So, you know, they have these algorithms that are crunching everything, and they want to see that your active listeners don't just fall off and then you don't put out music again for 3 years, and suddenly all those listeners who they assumed liked your music are now going to be harder to reach, harder to impress. What they want to see is you've, you know, putting out some music, people are listening, and as that might start to dip, you get the next thing out. So they're still engaged, and then the next thing. And, you know, their algorithm is watching. So put out more music.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking for artists and catalog that are active. And because it's like there's all sorts of metrics and data points that they're looking at to see what is happening out there, what music should be featured, what music has people getting excited about, that they're listening to, they're adding it to their library, they're saving it, they're downloading it. All these things impact, you know, their algorithm. And the best thing you can do is keep releasing music.
I heard the first time I heard the term attention economics was from a Spotify employee who was trying to communicate this. Like, you know, we deal in attention economics. We forget things very quick. And Spotify is all about making sure if you have engaged listeners, they want you to do the things to keep those people engaged. And they are under no... what's the word? They're not assuming that that you're going to drop a full, complete, beautiful, brilliant album every 3 months. It's like singles are great. Lead-up singles that are also then featured on an album you put out afterwards are great. Have some follow-up releases that might be less like serious or whatever. You know, take some chances, do remixes, alternate mixes, acoustic takes, whatever, instrumental stuff, live songs. Demos, like I have there's a folk songwriter that I absolutely love who put out a record maybe 3 months ago. He's planning to follow up with an EP that's literally his voice memos, and they sound good because he's amazing, but they also sound like crap because they're voice memos,
which can be amazing.
Yeah, and like he knows, like this is like the other cool thing, if not to just keep on Spotify since we said they're not the whole world, but. They do you a favor of in your catalog, putting your most serious releases at the top. Like, they group your albums all chronologically first. Then below the albums, if someone's on your profile, then they'll see the EPs and the singles and the things where, you know, they assume that those are maybe less serious releases for you. So feel free to take a lot of chances. Not everything you put out has to be brilliant, but I guess it should be engaging in some way.
You mentioned something I want to take a little tangent because I forgot to say earlier that albums are still very important. Like Chris is saying, the platforms, even though everything seems song-driven, which it is, which the music business, if we think about it, really has always been. Radio was always driven by a song. It may have sold a whole album, but it was just the songs that got placed in those places. It's just like the Spotify playlist of today and the way people engage with music. But those platforms still really organize music in two ways, albums and songs, and they feature albums as the official catalog or the most important catalog. So that's where we're at today. We did an episode of the podcast. It's episode number 166 called Singles Versus Albums. And I still think it's very important as an artist to do albums. You can listen to that episode. We lay it all out there on why. Some of it is tactical and strategic. Some of it is more just you as an artist and your experience. But for now, that's how the platform still organize music. So I just wanted to say that that's still an important way to release your music and pull tracks together as an album. Go ahead.
I had one thing to maybe restate the obvious, but if you can guarantee that your new release will at least have one song in all your followers on Spotify's Release Radar playlist, why just release them all on an album? Like, if you could then guarantee that as long as you took a few steps and, you know, planned out the timeline, every single you put out leading up to that album, you guarantee will be in all those people's playlists. Then you put an album out that, you know, also can have a lead track. I just don't understand why you wouldn't do that if you, you know, those people are just waiting to be reached and you know you can do it.
Yeah, don't think about an album as, okay, I've got this album and 10 tracks. I got to put them out together. We've also done an episode about release strategies in a streaming world where we talk about setting up the album with some of the songs that are on the album because of those tools that are available that it pushes it to the fans and the people that are following you on multiple platforms. And then when the actual official album comes out, all the previous play counts, assuming you've done it right and used the same ISRC codes, all combined together, and that album on release day looks like, hey, those singles that have been out for a while, they've got a lot of plays on them already. And so those must be the ones that I should focus in on. So there's lots of tools that have been developing that help us really guide fans and highlight certain songs and lead up to an album release that really makes the album release have more impact. It's interesting because, you know, we said streaming platforms reward you for releasing more music. You know, I'm a fan of U2, a band that I think has an amazing catalog, whether you like their music or not. They've done some, the fact that, you know, at this point in their career, they're still selling out stadiums. You know, you've got to have still some sort of relevance to do that. But they'll make an album, and under the current music market, it's really depressing. It's like, it comes out, and whether I like it or not, it's like, I know it's like, I'll see you in 5 years when we do another one. That world is over. It's like you don't go through this album cycle of like, all right, I'm going to do an album, then I'm going to disappear for 3-4 years. The platforms are really rewarding you, and your fans are going to stay more engaged if you're like, you know, do that album, but then do a live track, do a holiday song, or do a cover. Just do things to keep people engaged and let them know that you're still making music, because they're it is easy for us to access the market. That means lots of people are accessing the market. And just, you know, staying in your fans' ear every so often of saying, we're still here, we're still making music, keep following the story. That's more important than ever.
And now that we've talked a whole bunch about streaming and digital music, our final point is that in the distribution world of 2019, physical is still super, super important. And, you know, if 10 years ago you ordered 1,000 CDs or 10,000 CDs or whatever when you manufactured your album, maybe realistically you don't need to print as many. But CDs are still like a, you know, very low cost related to what you can sell it for. And your fans, if you make a connection that's deep enough with them at a live show or online or in whatever context you're engaging, they will buy CDs. Even if you doubt that they will ever take off the shrink wrap and listen to it in that way, it's really a great low-cost way for you to give them a way to pay you and show their appreciation. It's still one of the best ways to do that. And so I would say definitely don't assume that we were totally in a digital world. I know maybe in hip-hop and EDM that might be a little less true, but I still think it comes down to you know, the quality of your connection with your audience and what can you get them to pay you for. And I don't mean that just in a crass commercial way. It's like they, if they love your music and you've created some experience and they're connected with your art, like they want to help you. So that can be a great way to do it. So don't forget about CDs.
Yeah, it's one of those things that in a digital world, we haven't replaced that experience when you see an artist and they want to do something to solidify the evening of how amazing it was. I want to buy something. And a lot of people have over the years have said, oh, well, they'll just get a T-shirt. And I will honestly say that is absolutely not true. A lot of people that will buy a CD won't buy a T-shirt. T-shirts don't sell as well as some sort of musical format. I've seen it over and over again in our shows. I've observed many other bands at their shows. It's not like people just don't look at it the same way. Even if they just want something for you to sign, they will sign a CD or a vinyl album before they or buy that to get you to sign it before they would just get a T-shirt. But T-shirts are important. I don't want to make it sound like I'm down on T-shirts, but we've met a lot of artists in the past couple years. A lot of them have been YouTubers where like they're YouTube first and like distribution was even an afterthought, much less getting a CD, you know, pressed and sending it to our fans because they love us on YouTube. They're obviously not going to buy that. We've had some of the biggest, largest success stories in our entire history from people in the digital space offering a physical format to their fans. We're talking, you know,
Billboard charting.
Yeah, Billboard charting. The last one, this group, they're YouTubers. Their band name is Ninja Sex Party. They tend to, their day job, believe it or not, we're in 2019, this is an actual day job people can have, is playing video games on YouTube for another company. And so they started this band and their own channel, and they built up this following of people that like gaming, and they've done multiple album releases that we were like, you guys should probably think about doing a CD pre-sale because we think we could help you sell a lot of CDs. You know, we've got you in digital distribution, but 50,000 copies. Now, if you're an independent artist selling, and these weren't albums for just $15. They were signing all of them, so they were charging like $25, $30.
I should interrupt you, though. That was pre-sales.
Yeah, pre-sales.
So,
and the first time we did it, we actually had walls and walls of CDs at our old office, and they came for a week and just sat there 8 hours a day signing each one, and they still only got through 3,000 copies. So it was we had to tweak it a few ways. What we did was raise the price. So the last time we did it was $35. They still sold out. And you're thinking, these are YouTubers. These people, they're catering to junior hires. They don't even know what a CD is. So for a lot of artists, that could be a missed opportunity if you're just assuming your audience will not engage at that level. So it's something that, you know, don't go buy 50,000 copies of your album and expect that the same thing's going to happen. But I think our point is, yes, we're in a streaming era. That is where the majority of people are engaging with music these days. But your fans, depending on the kind of music you do, may not be there. Like I said, with my band, Small Town Poets, it's the 21st anniversary of our debut release, which was 1997, and CD World only. We still have some fans that if we don't make some CDs, they're not going to engage with the music. That's not where everyone else is at, but I still find, I was surprised when Chris and I were at Folk Alliance, a conference that caters towards folk, Americana music, and it was astounding how many artists in that genre still hadn't even done digital distribution because all their fans want CDs, and they sell CDs on the road, and that's their livelihood, and I was like, wow.
That's like an entire genre of people who make pretty good livings, yeah, playing house shows. They never walk into music venues. It's all like direct fan connection. House shows, selling CDs and vinyl, maybe T-shirts, but like all this digital stuff is not an afterthought, but it's secondary to how they make their living. So
yeah, and for the artists there, it was just weird to be in that space. This was just a couple months back, and like people were like, yeah, I guess I'll distribute this digitally. I'm like, what are you doing then? And like, well, my fans demand that I have CDs. And so it is 2019, but just don't make assumptions about your fans. Do some, you know, email them or on social, ask questions, do some polling, see what they want, and look at the data to see, you know, what opportunities there are, because there might be some missed opportunities. There's a couple websites out there. One of them, I think it's called Q Rates or something like that. I forget. It's one of those Silicon Valley startups where none of the vowels are in the right place and there's too many consonants. But it's one of those things where it allows you to put, it's sort of like fan funding just a vinyl. It's just like pre-sale for a vinyl. And then if you hit a goal, you print the vinyl. And so some of those tools out there exist to help you kind of gauge if that is something your fans want. Okay, if we hit this goal, we'll print this and we'll get that out there. So there's some tools out there that are no cost. If you don't hit the goal, it doesn't matter. Nobody has to pay anything. And it's just worth trying, because ultimately you want to make sure your fans have the most opportunity to support you in the ways they want to and listen to the music in the ways they want to.
Yeah.
And that is
our...
I think we got to the end. I don't even remember what the title of this episode is.
Something you need to know about something.
Yeah, all right. Well, we have some time for Q&A, and we would love to answer some questions about what we've talked about or anything. If you listen to the podcast for a long time, you can ask us questions about anything. But we've got a hand up right here, and if I'll have to repeat the question for those listening on the podcast. Yeah.
And by the way, my name is also Kevin.
Oh, excellent. Well, if he's got a lot of fans, you might just want to go with it. So those listening on the podcast, his question was, he's got music out there. An artist has a similar name and...
The same name.
Exact same name. Not similar. Exact same name. It's his personal, you know, it's his
given name.
Given name. That's what I was looking for. We can separate that for you. And in fact, if you're using CD Baby for distribution inside your account, there's a link where it's called Artist Separations. You can click on that and we will split off your catalog. And when you sign up new music, you can actually take your artist ID once we get that split for you, and you drop that in, and it'll make sure that it gets routed to the right person and right account. So you can get that taken care of. And once that's split, you can go claim the Spotify for Artist account under it'll know that this is the right Kevin Ferguson, and it'll make sure your music continues to go to the right place. So we can handle that for you.
And I believe it functions pretty much identically for Apple Music as well, right?
Yeah, when you sign up music, it asks you for the artist ID on Spotify and Apple Music. Those are the two they're doing. I think Amazon is coming soon where they'll start doing that as well. But yeah, we can handle that for you. And that is a problem it's funny. A lot of these music companies have come out of the tech world where they didn't think about, oh, there's two people with the same name making music? How did that happen?
It's sorted out on the CD Baby side because I only get revenue, I only get money for my own stuff, not for his. I'm assuming his get a good.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. There wouldn't be any cross-pollination with the money because the UPC code and the ISRC codes make sure that all the money flows to the right place. So,
which again is kind of a bummer if he's got a ton of listeners.
Yeah, he's got this different thing that he's got going on over here. It's very different than his EDM stuff. But yeah, so that'll be handled for you. Yes. The question is if there's any sort of definition on the term release and how it gets used. Really, the when people say, are you talking about like release dates or just my latest release?
Well, because you were using the term a whole bunch of times and saying like, when you release, or blah, 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 so what does that really mean?
I would say that is the moment your music becomes publicly available on platforms that people, you know, popularly engage with. So once it goes on Spotify, once it goes on Apple Music, there's a thing that happens sometimes where people will like put a track on SoundCloud and it might sit there for 6 months or 2 weeks until it gets properly distributed to, in that case, when you released it, is tougher to define. Like a publicist might say, well, that's already been released. It's on SoundCloud. But I think of it as once it becomes available widely.
Yeah, to me, the release and the release date, it's like my latest release and the release date are that date that I pick where I'm pushing it worldwide, available on all platforms. Because sometimes, you know, you might have, in a digital world, you might have a track that's done and you might make it available for a small segment of your fans to hear. Like I've used, we mentioned that marketing platform that we have called Show.co. I've used new tracks sometimes to just drive Spotify follows or email signups and let people have early access to our upcoming release. But the term release really means like it's been pushed worldwide. It's available everywhere. This is like the official release date. So that's what I would say. Question here. Yeah. All right.
When we went to the studio, we didn't get a chance to do all of the things that we wanted to do, like extra ad-libs and bells and whistles with the music. So we had the event coming up, so we decided we're just going to go ahead and put the songs up anyway. And when we come back, we'll just go back in the studio and do what we wanted to really do. The question is, would we be able to take down what we put up and put up
The question was, they've got a release. I'm going to kind of sum up for people on listening to the podcast. That they got a release. They didn't get to do everything they wanted to on the original release. And they've gone back and fixed some things they wanted to fix. And they want to re-release it. Can they take down the old one? The answer is yes. But if it's a new master recording, which you have in this case, it's not the same recording. You'll need new ISRC codes, which will mean that the stream counts don't port over, which right now the only platform that matters is Spotify because they're the only ones that visibly show it on to users. But so that's something to consider. But yes, you can take the old one down, but anybody who's added that to their playlist or liked that song or downloaded it, it'll disappear for them. So my opinion would be to leave them both up because you've got the one that's out there. Just let it be out there. You've got a new version. Call it, this is the one we really wanted. And then leave them both up, you know, because then it's two things for people. If someone who had that other recording and loved the song, now they've got another version to check out as well. In fact, that's one of the things, I'm the marketing guy in the band, and I'm sure the rest of the band gets really irritated with me. But I mean well. But one of the things I keep saying is, we must have with every song the official mix, we must have an instrumental mix, we must have a multiple alternate mix. So this song that's I'm supposed to hear any second now that's being mixed, I'm like, we need it. We need a rock mix of it. We need a dream pop mix of it. And we need, it's kind of got a dancey beat, which is different for us. I'm like, we need a disco mix of it. And I'm like, and I'm not kidding. We got to do this because if someone loves that song, I mean, how many times have you been a fan of a band and they release a song, then you hear an alternate mix of that song and you love both of them and you want to listen to both of them? It's just more opportunities for people who love a particular song to keep enjoying that song in a new way. And in a streaming world, it also allows you opportunities to pitch a really good song to different playlists. So like the dream pop version could be go to playlists that the regular version would not really fit into. So to me, I think the more variations of a song, you don't want to get to the, you know, the point of being ridiculous. Somebody told me that for every new song, they do 60 mixes. They had to be exaggerating because nobody can think of 60 different ways to mix the same song without just really just getting ridiculous. So, but their point was that there's new ways people are engaging with music. And if someone likes, if you got a really good song that people like, give them a different version of it so they can like both of them. And so that's why I'm not a fan of taking back catalog down for a number of reasons, but that's one of them.
I was just going to say, from more of like an art creative standpoint, you might know what's missing on that version you put up. But if it's getting attention, if people are liking it, they're not wrong, right? So you don't want to rob them of their enjoyment of it, even though you know in your mind it could have been better and whatever. But like I have my first solo record, like there's things on there where I'm like, I would probably take that down. But then I hear from people that are like, that's your best record. I'm like, oh shit, I've been getting worse this whole time. But you know, like they responded to it and they're not wrong either. So yeah, don't be quick to be ashamed of something you feel like might not be all that it could be, because for someone else it might be everything they need.
Got another question back here. Yep. No, you don't have to. The question was if there's music out there with a different distribution company, I want to change it over to CD Baby. Do I have to change anything? As long as we've never distributed it, you don't have to change anything. You can use the same UPC codes. You can use the same ISRC codes. In fact, in a future episode of the podcast, you will hear about the distribution nightmare my band has been living in, because our back catalog was on a major label and suddenly it disappeared from all the services a week and a half ago. And I was frantically getting it moved over to CD Baby, still with the label, but it's a long story. Future episode of the podcast, you'll hear that story. But basically, use the same UPC codes, use the same ISRC codes. All the information ported over, all the stream counts came back. And so it's just a matter of managing the time when they pull it down and it goes up with us. So it's usually something like, you know, if you tell them, you know, it needs to be down by X date, and you start the sign-up process with us and same that have that same date as the release, you know, the where it goes live, and you want to use the original release date as well, then it should be pretty much, for people that don't know what happened, it's seamless. You know, the music's the same, the album art's the same, the information's the same, and it's we have folks that can help you do that. So, got a question here.
So.
That's always a good thing.
Did you put it out yet? Okay. Well, there's still stuff you can do.
There's still opportunity. I mean, if you have an album that's been out for a while, there's still, you know, I would still make sure that you make it available worldwide, you know, available on all platforms. But there's still opportunity. You know, we've talked about on the podcast a lot in detail about finding playlist curators or just building email lists and getting your fans activated in certain ways. So, you know, if the music's good, you know, my standpoint is if the music's good, there's always opportunity. It doesn't matter when it came out. So if you think the music's good and people like it, there's lots of ways to get those fans doing things that help you out. There's lots of opportunity to keep pushing that to new places.
I think depending, well, maybe even regardless of the genre, if it has a real, you know, quality that speaks to a particular niche of music, like you should target independent playlist curators on Spotify. And we have a couple episodes of the podcast called...
The Truth About Spotify Playlists, Part 1 and 2.
Yeah, so listen to those. We basically go through how we stalked these people and found
literally,
out who they were and looked for their contact information.
Had to do a gut check.
Yeah, and pitch the music to, you know, for me it was acoustic covers. For you it was what, like a CCM?
Yeah, like the band Small Town Poets. I mean, our heyday was in the Christian market, and so I really looked at a lot of people, some of them who just stumbled into big playlists because they chose good keywords when they created a playlist on their account 5, 6, 7 years ago and found them on Facebook, and they were like, oh, sure, I'll add your track. And so lots of those two episodes we mentioned, I think they're in the 180 range of the podcast. If you go back in that, you'll find them, and it's the Truth About Spotify Playlist, part one and two. We really detail how to find some of these people and approach them in a way that actually gets results.
And again, if they're genre aficionado type people, passionate about a specific kind of music that you make, your release date won't matter to them. They've never heard of you. They listen. They love it. Cool. They'll put it on a playlist. So I wouldn't worry that it's, you know, that it's already out for those types of playlists.
Yeah. For those folks, I never said, this is our latest thing. I always said, I've been digging your playlist. I'm in a band called Small Town Poets, and I think this track would fit your playlist. And they go, cool. Yeah, I'll add it. You know, I never said, this is our latest and greatest. And I never differentiated in that manner. I really just related it back to what you have fits what I'm doing. Here you go. And I like what you're doing. So any other questions? We got one here.
I had a question about changing your artist name.
Don't do it.
Well, no, we should get some context.
Question.
Yeah, sorry.
Finish your question. Yeah. Well, so the question is about changing the artist name, and he wants to change his artist name. So for a little context, why do you want to change it? And it doesn't have to be some big philosophical answer. You could just say you don't like it. But why do you want to change it? Just curious.
Yeah. Change your name. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm just trying to be ridiculous.
I'm not really concerned with that anymore, so it seems like a huge
The one thing, so your options are, if you're going to change your name, the options are to pull your old catalog, repackage it so the artwork matches the new name. They will not take it under the new name if it matches the old name. Has to match the new name. And you can redistribute it with a new UPC code. You could keep the same ISRC codes, but you'd have to have a new UPC code. That is not ideal. The easiest thing to do, I think, in what Spotify was alluding to in their response to you, is to just release new music, keep the old artist profile there, and then create playlists that have that music in it on your new artist profile, which you can do. You can create on your artist profile, you know, there's like official artist playlists that you can create, and you can put whatever you want in them. So
that's not
an easy way.
That's not a problem unique to people who have wildly different band names throughout their career. That's even like Tom Petty and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Those catalogs are on separate profiles on Spotify. So, you know, like, I like Jason Isbell, the singer-songrewriter. He put out a bunch of records under his own name, and then he put out one under Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. And suddenly, in order to get attention for that catalog, he's got to do that exact thing of make a playlist or feature, you know, the kind of pinned release on Spotify to draw people to a different profile, which is really another reason why you should try to find, even if you change your name this time, pick one you know you're going to stick with for like the next 1,000 years. So everything you make can live together and you manage it all in one place. And you're allowed to change too. So if it's a matter of like your music's a little different throughout your life, cool. Like it should be.
And this is a problem that really the digital world, it's a brand new problem. You know, in a physical world, when you went to a music store, they might file them together, or they'd be right next to each other, or you would just get them from the artist at the show, or things would just go out of print. I'm hoping there's a future where these services allow artists to connect as like, these are relational artists, and now the fan base is kind of grouped together in a relational way on these platforms, instead of like he said, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. That's ridiculous that they're separate. So the idea that there's a way to connect them And I'm sure that'll happen eventually. It's just we're not there yet. And so you just have to get a little thoughtful when you're changing names because it impacts a lot and it's not as easy as it used to be. So the one thing about a physical world, it's like if you change your name and the physical product ran out, nobody can find it, it's like it didn't exist. In a digital world, nothing dies. So everything has to be kept intact. And I don't recommend pulling catalog down just because of a name change, because like, you know, Chris mentioned that all those people who were enjoying it, it's like now you're telling them they were wrong in liking your music. So we've got time for one more question. We've got one more right here.
So you mentioned keywords earlier.
Yes.
So how important are keywords to Spotify, and can you make any suggestions for finding good ones?
I can make some suggestions. So the question is about how important keywords are to Spotify, and I think
or any streaming platform.
With Spotify in particular, if you do the thing where you have a future release date, we send your music to them, but it's not out yet. You go in through Spotify for artist's account and do the unreleased music thing. They ask for a ton more information. So we send them a ton of stuff, and then they want you to further provide instrumentation, genre keywords, what language is it in, you know, like a whole bunch of other stuff. So I think it's important, very important for them to be able to know whether this is going to fit a particular playlist need or what region of the world, what territory in the world your music might be suited for.
The interesting thing is with keywords, we deliver music to Amazon, and Alexa is a big deal for them. And so for them, there's going to be things that they're going to want that Alexa may want tie to your music. So people may say certain words that what they really want is your music. So there's this whole thing about understanding keywords and ways people might find your music. If your fans may describe your music a certain way, you want to know that. You want to notate it. And, it's beyond just, we are rock. We are hip hop. It's like, your fans may say this. So we want to attach that to your tracks as well. So all those things are going to become more and more important, which, you know, the nerdy term is metadata, that if you, you know, read music biz press or stuff like that, they'll refer to metadata, and that's just what they're talking about. All the descriptors that go along with your track that help people understand what it is, who wrote it, what's in it, how people find it, and the more you know about that and the more you can understand how your fans think about your music and what you think it is, the better.
And I think it's really exciting that Spotify wants to know whether there's a xylophone on your song or whatever, harmonium or mellotron or something. Like, iTunes never wanted that. Like, they just had a download. It had only so much metadata with it. And, like, now they can, you know, potentially put it in the mellotron playlist or whatever. Like, so it's great. I think it's really exciting.
So it's important to think of as much keywords and metadata as
you can. And I would think more important, yeah. I mean, search, yes, but also for these platforms to know what to do, where to place your music, in what contexts, which, yeah, I suppose ends up being a search thing.
Yeah, the idea of search, you know, when someone says search, most people think, oh, I went to Google, I thought of something, and I typed it in. That's one way, but search can happen by someone speaking to a device. It can also happen by an algorithm searching for tracks that match what you said, but they can't figure out what you said, but they think this is what you said. And so there's all sorts of different ways that that can be connected. So the more things you can think about, the better. And honestly, it happens in the recording process because, just thinking of documenting a lot of stuff. And I've, you know, again, I'm the guy in the band that's always like, we need to document all this stuff. But then when I'm in the studio, the last thing I want to do is sit there with a pen and paper documenting stuff. Can I be creative for a minute? Can you just let me be creative? And just let me exist in that world for a while and put my marketing brain aside for a while. But some of those things, like a playlist based on albums that were recorded at this studio in New York City. And it's like, oh, well, my album was recorded in that studio in New York City. It's like all those things, the more metadata, the more points into the music. Some of the things that are coming in the future is, you know, you think about going on Spotify, you can search by artist. But man, I'm a fan. I'm a guitar player. I'm a fan of a lot of guitar players that played on a lot of amazing albums, and I cannot find them anymore because album liners are gone. But I want to find all the albums that this guitar player played on. Show me some playlists and all the albums that that guy played on, or that these two people collaborated on, and things like that. So that's where the world is going. And so having all that information, even though you may not be asked for it now, is important because it will be in the future.
Well, I was going to say over the past 15 or 20 years, as digital music became, you know, the dominant mode, a lot of that information went by the wayside, and there's been a real lack of credits and things, but now they're catching up super fast, and they want more information than they ever wanted before. So that's a good thing, and yeah. I think it's going to be really great for all those reasons.
Yeah, and so that's just something as an artist, as you're thinking about the release process, as you're writing and recording music, no matter how big or important the release is or how little and insignificant you think the release is, I'm just throwing out this cover. It's like, figure out a way for you to just standardize the documentation process so you can just do it like, okay, here's the things that I think are important. Here's the lyrics. Here's this. It's all in this spot. So in the future, when I know people are asking for it, I can just drop it in, and I'm not figuring out, where was it that we did this thing 10 years ago? I thought it was here. No, it was here. It's like, no, just get it all done. And that way, you know, you have that information, and as that world expands, you're covered.
And be annoying to yourself. Like, document beats per minute, every instrument, every player.
Beats per minute is super important. And I know there's some tools that can help, you know, figure it out, but that is one of those things that's very important.
Number of chords, whatever you can think of.
The key it's in.
Yeah, the key, everything.
You may not even be able to agree what key it's in. good question. He's asking where he can listen to the podcast. It is available. The two easiest ways to find it, if you have an iPhone, it's on the Apple Podcast app. It's in the Apple Podcast, you know, what would you call it? Catalog or section of Apple. And it's also on Spotify. But any podcast app that you have, if you just search DIY Musician Podcast, it'll pull it right up. So, but it's on Spotify. It's in Apple Music and iTunes and the iTunes Podcast catalog, so you can find it in all those places. Thank you guys so much for being here. It's been amazing to have you out here. We hope to do this a whole lot more.
Yeah, thanks.
There is still... Make sure you grab a t-shirt. There's plenty of beer, wine, and food, so be sure to grab more of that. And Brian back here reminded me, fill out the form if you're interested in being a user tester that can test some of our products before they're available to everybody else. And be sure to meet everybody and meet someone you didn't meet already.
Thanks for coming.
Yep.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.